The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So, perhaps in important ways, I really don't have anything to say this morning. And the important ways in which that kind of exists, I guess I can say some things about. And it would be the topic of the talk then would be nothing. And it's one of my favorite topics. So how much can you say about nothing? We'll find out. Ideally, I would maybe talk about nothing, and by the time it's done, there'll be nothing. You'll have nothing. You'll have gotten nothing here. And you'd be happy. You'd be content to have nothing. One of my favorite words from the ancient Buddhist language is the word akinchana, which means no thing, nothing. And it's used as one of the titles for the people who are fully awakened, fully liberated. They're akinchano. They are nothing. And so that sounds pretty frightening and uninteresting and perhaps boring to do all this practice and meditation, maybe go on retreats and end up being a nothing. I mean, you want to be something. And so that we don't advertise this too publicly, come to IMC to be nothing. if we said come to IMC to be something important, then, maybe people would come more. But to come be nothing, the tradition says that these people who are the nothings, what qualifies them as being a no-thing person is that they have no attachments and they have no clinging. And nothing they cling to. So it's no thing that they cling to. So they might have some possessions, some things, but there's no clinging to it. And the definition of no thing here is this absence of attachments or clinging. I was a little bit inspired to have nothing to talk about today by something that one of the great spiritual teachers in America said, which is Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. And he preferred, I don't quote him exactly right, but something like, he was more interested in simple and deep than kind of, for him, he thought a culture which focuses on shallow and complex. So simple and deep versus complex and shallow. And so I think this, certainly characterizes the path of meditation, that we're more interested in something simple, nothing, that goes deep inside of us, that has a depth to it, as opposed to being complex, complex life, lots of things, complex identities, complex agendas, and it keeps us shallow, keeps us on the surface of things, surface of our lives, surface of our minds and our hearts. And so the process of meditation has a lot to do with shedding the complexities that are shallow, or shedding the preoccupation with the things that are on the surface of our minds and our hearts, so that we can settle in, drop down into what's deeper down. And so, to the degree to which the kind of shallow parts or the surface parts of our life are preoccupied about things, it's a lot to do with meditation about shedding that preoccupation with things so that we can have something, a nothing, which is very different than having things. So the kind of things that we have in our mind, preoccupations, is a whole range of things. The The Buddhist tradition has this very interesting term called upadhi, which has a meaning, apparently, in this original form, a meaning to take something up. And so we take things up, and then we're taken up by them. So we pick something up, an attachment to something, and that attachment then lives in us in such a way that it motivates us or drives our behavior. So example might be, we get attached to a certain identity. We need to be someone, and we need to be smart or beautiful or have status or, you know, have opinions, or we need something to be someone who's a someone. So we take that up. And then once we've taken that up, then that becomes the determining factor for what motivates us. We have to sustain it, we have to keep it going. It has requirements. You know, if the requirement is to be beautiful, then I better spend, you know, more time in the morning taking care of my clothes and getting just the right clothes than care in what I say when I speak. And I think it's quite an interesting kind of balance, how much time some people spend on their looks compared to how much time they spend on what they have to say. And I learned that a few days ago, apparently, that my favorite man, Mr. Rogers, he spoke very simply to his children's program in America, and he spoke to children, young children who watch TV. And one of the best things going on TV, if you've never seen Mr. Rogers, watch him for a while. And apparently, he would go write out a script that he was going to say on for each program, and he would take sometimes 8 different versions of a sentence before he had the sentence just right, in order to convey just the right thing to children. And so the example that was given to me was, so the first sentence, the first draft would be, he would tell kids, you should be safe. Well, that's not a good message for kids to get. It probably makes them more scared than safe. And by the after a number of renditions, over and over again, he would say, it's a good idea to check in with your parents about what's a safe thing to do. And somehow, I don't know if I have it exactly right how he did it, but you know, the point I wanted to make is there was a lot of care to what he said. So if our identity is tied up with our looks, there are people who spend an inordinate amount of time taking care of their looks. Is that complex? Is that really the deep, or is it shallow? And I choose that as an example because looks are, they say, are skin deep. You know, it's not very deep inside of us. And to be concerned with our appearance versus what's deep inside is a huge difference. So what we do when we meditate is a lot of what we do is do nothing. It's an amazing place to do nothing, to undo the doings. And to make meditation just one more something that you have to do, one more something to attain, one more something to be, is to add to the complexity that the minds are often caught up in. And in fact, a lot of what meditation is undoing or doing less. And this idea of doing nothing in meditation is a very powerful idea when the mind is incessantly trying to do something. It's trying to plan the future, redo the past, engage in fantasies, construct. Amazing what mind can construct, what the mind activity gets involved in making up. One of the ones that's fascinating is boredom. Boredom is not inherent to any place or anything or any situation at all. Boredom is always a construct in the human mind. It's an evaluation, a relationship, an attitude that gets formed in the mind. We evaluate situation against our desires, our wishes, our past, memories, or our projections, all kinds of things. But boredom is a construct. So what happens in a really boring situation like this talk? What happens if you're able to relax that part of the mind that constructs boredom. Let that fall away. That activity of boring, of making boredom, ceases, stops. Nothing has changed, but the feeling that it's boring has dropped away. Some people have a very strong recurrent idea that something needs to happen, or something dangerous is about to happen. That's an activity of the mind. The mind is engaged in those kinds of thoughts, those kinds of feelings. It's mental neurons that are firing in some way. It's not built into the fabric of the universe that you should have that, those attitudes and those thoughts. And in meditation, those firing those neurons can quiet down. And the feeling of fear, the feeling of wanting something has to happen, I have to get something, begins to kind of fade away, and we're just left here without it. The idea of shame that some people carry with them, or feelings of somehow being unworthy, or the feelings of resentment that we might carry, underlying sense of aversion that might be very deep and kind of pervasive filter in which we see the world. These are all considered to be activities of the mind, constructs of the mind in Buddhism. And when you have a construct of the mind, it can be unconstructed. When the mind is involved in activities, those activities can become quiet, can become settled. And one of the best ways to settle the mind from all those activities is not to be interested in too many somethings, to be interested in nothing, to not be focused on the objects of our thoughts, focus on our concerns, focus on trying to make something happen, even focus on making something happen in meditation interferes with this important part of meditation, which is, in fact, to settle, to quiet, the stilling of all the activities of the mind. And in that process, we touch into something deep. So there's Mr. Roger quote, simple and deep. So what happens to you if you sit quietly and then take maybe the metaphoric hand of the mind, of awareness, and reach deep inside of you to the deepest place that you know and touch it? What do you encounter there? What do you touch? You become still and quiet and reach down inside, below all the layers and all the preoccupations with daily life affairs and work and the relationships you have. And just keep going down. Reach deep down in there. In your depths, what do you find there? What do you touch? Some people will touch something that's difficult, something that's unresolved. Will touch maybe some of the places where there's deep hurt, or maybe some deep anger or something. Some place that needs to be healed. Some people will touch sadness that they didn't even know they had. Some people will touch fear that this was kind of pervasive underlying current of much of their lives. Some people will touch degrees of peace or contentment or the places of love that can exist within us. What do we touch down there? And part of the function of meditation is to shed, to simplify the surface chatter of our mind, to do nothing, really, to allow ourselves to do nothing, to sit here, do nothing, and go through the layers of boredom, through the layers of agendas and trying to get something and attain something, and trust it's okay to do nothing for a while. It's okay to shed. And then in that process of simplifying and simplifying, what will happen is that we'll drop down into a deeper and deeper place, or a more fuller place, or a richer place, inside of us. It seems that a lot of the places where we suffer in our lives have a lot to do with, one way or the other, the surface chatter, the surface complexity of things. Doesn't mean we don't suffer deep inside either, but a lot of the challenges and the reactivity and the running away and the attacking and the blaming and the self-loathing that come with our challenges are surface activities of the mind, part of this complex, shallow area of our life. And to be able to kind of settle deeper than that, to quiet that, to have all those things, you know, to see them as less important than nothing. There's some things, there are some activities that go on in the mind, and those activities don't have to have final authority. They don't have to be the thing, the place that we say that, you know, this is what's centrally important in my life. And to trust this process of simplification, to trust that nothing needs to happen. That little slogan, nothing needs to happen, is a very powerful slogan to carry with you when you meditate. And then you repeat that to yourself, nothing needs to happen. And then the mind will argue. What do you mean nothing needs to happen? Of course something has to happen. And then you go through the list of all the things. And, you know, Gil doesn't know anything about meditation when he says nothing needs to happen. You know, there's the Buddhist text lists all these things that are supposed to happen. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, the stages of this and the stages of that. And, you know, I got to get going here and huff and puff. And, you know, you want to do this quickly. What do you mean nothing needs to happen? Yes, maybe when we get fully liberated, I can be a nothing. But you know, but the way to be a nothing is first to be a something, first to have something. I don't know if that's the way it works. I think that it's the whole process. It's a process of simplification, of shedding all the things which are extra, all the things that are extra. And you know you're on that path when we start touching into a deeper sense of contentment. And that's dangerous to get to something. If anything's a thing, you can get attached to. But on that path of simplifying and simplifying, simple and deep, there comes a time of contentment. And sometimes that's a contentment that's different than how maybe surface contentment is, because it can even involve a contentment with feeling uncomfortable, a contentment with being present for what's difficult in our lives. There's a way of being simple and deep to really connect to the depth of who we are and find that that's a difficult place. Some people will recoil from what's difficult, and in the recoiling, surface up into the where it's shallow and complex. Some people will actually distract themselves quite actively and get busy so they don't have to feel what's going on here. This path, that meditation path, is a path that of trusting what's deep inside, whether it's difficult or whether it's quite beautiful in there. It's a wonderful thing. So to be content with what happens when we sit there, and just sit there and just be present. And this idea of reaching deep, deep inside, becoming still, becoming quiet, and reaching deep inside and touching what's there. In my mind, the idea of touching is a beautiful thing. It's not fixing, it's not hitting, it's not pulling away. It's kind of a loving act. Like, you know, a friend of yours perhaps is going through a hard time, and you might gently touch their arm. I'm here with you. So they know there's companionship accompanying. So to touch ourselves, to touch what's deep. And we can't go into those depths if we're too busy doing things. If we're trying to be something, so to do nothing. Do nothing. So some people find it very powerful when they meditate to put a lot of emphasis, a lot of attention on all the things the mind is trying to do. When you look at if you really study what you're thinking, chances are that all those thoughts are in some way or other trying to accomplish something. If we are involved with our, if our emotions are strong, it's not unusual for the emotions themselves to represent something in the background of them, something we want or something we don't want. So this idea that, so but just kind of not to do anything, not to need to do anything, nothing needs to happen. And then you argue, of course something, this needs to happen. No, nothing needs to happen. Maybe I'll take my chances, maybe I'll trust this little slogan. Let me take a little, stay here a little bit longer and see what happens. And then perhaps, if you stay longer, maybe some of this mental activity, this the swirling and whirling, the excitement, the agitation of the mind, the preoccupation of the mind, can settle some more, and settle some more, and settle some more. So the classic, I don't know, classic metaphor, simile for this idea that many of you have probably heard of, is that of a muddy pond. So, you know, it's been stirred up, the kids have played there and stirred it all up, it's all muddy. And then if you leave the pond alone, the mud will settle and become clear. If you do nothing to the pond, it'll settle. But if you take a big paddle and try to help it to settle by stirring it around, you know, the paddle, you know, you're pushing those mud particles, down you go, get down. You know, just keep, you keep, you know, the water's going to be stirred up and this mud's going to stay in solution. It's not going to settle. In order to let the pond settle, you have to stop paddling. You know, you have to leave it alone. And so our minds get all worked up about things. And then if we're trying to too actively involved in trying to fix or change or push away or pat down, you know, all that activity, it actually stirs it up even more. And so there's something very profound, learning how to leave everything alone, to do nothing, to do nothing. One of the places where it's kind of can be very clear after a while if you meditate, is meditators tend to be, sooner or later, troubled by their thinking. Because thinking somehow, you know, is the opposite of meditation, or keeps us from being present and focused and keeps us distracted. And so it's reasonable to be a little troubled, because distracted thoughts can be so distracting that they distract us. Distractions that distract us from the fact that we're distracted. You get that? We're so caught up in those distractions, we don't even know we're distracted. And so so if we're bothered by the thoughts, by our thinking, and we want to try to attack them or fix them or think our way out of them, we're just stirring the mud in the pond. One of the best things to do with thinking is to do nothing. But it's not nothing which allows everything to gallop along the way they were, but it's a kind of nothing that is inherent or is part and parcel of mindfulness, of clearly seeing. The recipe here is to see, to recognize, to be present, to have a clarity, this is what's happening, and leave it at that. This is what's happening. And that does a number of things. But one of the things it does is the energy of the mind is kind of like food. It feeds, that energy will feed wherever it goes. And if the energy of the mind goes into being clearly aware of what's happening, then the energy of the mind is not going into, so what's happening is distractions, is a lot of thinking. If we're really caught up in them, then the energy of the mind is feeding the distractions. If we open up to a clear seeing, clear awareness, I'm thinking, and you do nothing more than that, then the energy of the mind is going into the awareness more than into the distraction. Same thing with swirl of emotions. it turns out that a lot of emotions continue through time because we are involved with them. We're bothered, we want them, we're somehow engaged with them. But to really to be clear and open, present, oh, here's an emotional life, here's emotional feeling, and let that arise in the clarity of the mind, clarity of awareness, then the energy of the mind is going into clarity as opposed to into fueling and feeding the emotions. And this, so the idea of doing nothing has a lot to do with what we're feeding. And by not being involved in all the activities of the mind, we don't feed and reinforce the mind being so active and busy. And then you'll be debating with it. What do you mean that I'm not supposed to be active in the mind? I have important problems to solve. I have important things to attain. I have important things to do, and I'm an important person. And we live in an important society where is neurotically driven for more and more activities and more emails and more texts and more websites and more. There's just so much that keeps the mind busy and active. It's involved in something. What if you let your mind be involved with nothing? What about nothing? If in order to make the nothing a something that's more appealing, we could call it sacred nothing. Maybe that's just enough of a carrot so that you're willing to try the sacred nothing. The nothing, just be. To be simple and deep. And one of the interesting things that happens as we kind of let this process of shedding, of simplifying and deepening happen, is that certain things get amplified. Space, spaciousness gets amplified. When we're claustrophobically involved in thoughts and ideas and feelings, caught up in all the details of our life, there's very little room to feel the spaciousness of life, spaciousness of now, of here. But to have spaciousness, it's all here, there's lots of space, but it gets amplified. Time, wonderfully, time gets amplified. What does it mean to have time amplified? So it's not saying a time slows down or time speeds up. But sometimes in meditation or this simplified way of being, this kind of subtle, quiet, simple situation, there's something about time that gets rich, almost like multidimensional. Sometimes it feels like it goes faster, sometimes it feels like it goes slower, but it's amplified. Awareness, the capacity to know, becomes amplified. Our sense of presence in the middle of our life gets amplified. The now, this moment, whatever we're doing, it becomes amplified. It becomes richer, it becomes deeper, it becomes kind of special. And it's a little bit sad, all the chasing after something that people do, when some of the most, probably what they most want in life, the sense of happiness and well-being and safety and contentment and feeling complete, feeling settled, feeling at home in this world, feeling is available here and now in an amplified moments of now, in the amplified moments of nothing. Nothing to do, nothing to be, nothing needs to happen. And to trust that, and then the magic or the specialness of this is that this deep and simple place that lives inside of us is in some ways not quite nothing in there. It's not. I don't think of it as the same thing as an activity of the mind. For me, activities of the mind are more surface things. But there's a deep sources within inside of us of motivation that are connected to love, connected to compassion, connected to peace, that connected to a deep sense of well-being, that can provide us with all the motivations that we need to live a good life. So it's a kind of turning inward that turns itself inside out, and so that when we come back into the world, we're not doing it in a complex and shallow way, but doing it from a deep, settled place. A place that doesn't get anxious, doesn't get greedy, a place where there's no need to prove oneself or defend oneself, where there's no place for shame or resentment, not because it shouldn't be there, but because it doesn't live in that place, that depth. And those things are just seen as a surface. So finally, what I'd like to say is that a lot of this process of meditation is about shedding a lot of the things that we think are so important, or keep us so preoccupied, keeps us kind of racing and going. And to help that shedding, the reference point of nothing is very useful. And I use the language of shedding because I think of it as like shedding the snake of a skin, the skin of a snake. That as the snake gets bigger and grows, it sheds its old skin. As we go deep and simple, we grow, become bigger. And all the stuff that we thought was important is seen as just skin that gets shed. And this natural, organic process of somehow becoming bigger and then shedding is, I think, a wonderful, wonderful analogy for this process. And may you become really big. And maybe even a certain kind of way, powerful, content, peaceful, at home in yourself, at home in this world, at the same time as becoming nothing. Doing nothing. And trusting that in nothing you will live in this world wisely and caringly. So, today, for some people, Sunday is a Sabbath, which is a time for sacred nothings. May you have a sacred nothing day. Let your time and presence and attention be amplified. Thank you.